get ready.
NBC didn't have to create rape allegations to keep from selling to Bill Cosby. That's like me saying I don't want to sell you my car, but then going around telling people you rob banks.
For real talk.
Hey man, I'm just gonna say it. If you don't think you sexist, ask yourself why you champion LeVar Ball but think Cardi B should go away.
All the time.
Not everybody's gonna like it, but don't ever, ever apologize for trying to be a better person.
Welcome to the Spann Report with your host, Mr. Spann.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Spann Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Spann. This is episode number 196 of the report, and right now we're rocking out to some Yuna. Best kind of love, man. The best love. Rock out with your boy. Yeah, man. It's been a couple weeks, man. It's been a couple weeks since we did a traditional Spann Report podcast, man. So we got to get back into our groove. We kind of ease right into it with some of this smooth R&B and shit. You know what I'm saying? But it is a Saturday evening, man. A Saturday evening. I moved the show to Saturdays as opposed to Tuesdays because, yo, your man Spann works a lot. And sometimes it's difficult for me to get everything I need to get done during the week, man. So, like, we're really trying to maintain some consistency with the show and getting them out once a week. So yeah, man, we decided to move the show to a Saturday, but that's what we're doing tonight, man. We are chopping it up here on a Saturday night for episode number 196 of the Spann Report Podcast, man. So appreciate everybody who's gonna watch this live, appreciate everybody who's gonna listen to this later. But before we get into all of our podcast goodness, man, I gotta let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Spann Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. Of course, I'll play those voicemails here live on the show and respond here on the show. You can also email me at feedback@thespannreport.com. That's feedback@thespannreport.com. Go ahead and leave those emails, and of course, I'll read those emails here live on the show and respond as well. I got a few emails that I need to read tonight, so we'll definitely do that. When you do that, man, when you send those emails, so definitely go ahead and go about the business of doing that. Leave 5-star reviews on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio, preferably 5 stars, man. The 5-star reviews are the ones to get read. Those are the ones to get read, man. So leave those, and I appreciate everybody who goes about the business of doing it, and it helps the show grow, and it gives us visibility, and it helps people know that you fucking with us here at the Spann Report. So I appreciate everybody who goes about the business of doing that, man. Real talk. 5-star reviews on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio, man. Follow your boy on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr. Underscore Span. Go ahead and do that. You can get merch. You can get some fly shit, man. I'm wearing right now, I'm wearing a Beer and Chicken Podcast hoodie right now, man. Just got this in. This came in today, man. So I had to go ahead and rep for the show. So you can get Span Report Podcast stuff there. You can get Beer and Chicken Podcast stuff there. You can get mugs, t-shirts, hoodies. We can go into, like, you know, putting out, you know, phone cases and all, and stickers and all sorts of stuff, man. Go to the Span Report Network store on the Span Report Podcast site on www.thespanreport.com. And go ahead and get yourself some merch, man. It's another way to help us keep everything going over here. And it's another way for you to show your love and support for the shows that we're doing and the movement that we're trying to put, you know, we're trying to bring forward, man. It means a lot for everybody who goes about the business of doing that. So thank you for everybody who will do that and who has done that. We thank you so much for doing so, man. But yeah, I got to shorten up all the business stuff. I'm going to just leave a lot of this stuff in the show notes. Because it's a lot, it's beginning to become a thing where it's a lot of stuff to kind of run into, you know, run down and run into. So yeah, man, I might just start leaving a lot of this stuff in the show notes. If you're listening and if you're subscribed, man, you know a lot of this stuff already. You've heard me say it 1,000 times. So yeah, man, I may start leaving a lot of this stuff in the show notes, man. But we got a few things to talk about, man. You know, I've been like kind of avoiding even talking about gun control over the past couple of weeks. I'm going to speak a little bit to it later on in the show, man. We got the Parkland shooting and some of the conversations surrounding gun control, you know, the ban of the AR-15 and all sorts of things. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. We got some Blue Blazer stuff to get into. We got some Cheaper to Keeper to get into. We got some newsy stuff to get into. We got a lot of different stuff to get into tonight here at the Span Report, man. Real talk. And we're going to actually kind of get right off into the show, man. And one of the first things we're going to get into, one of the very first things we're going to get into, this has to do with the fact that it's been a lot of crazy news going on. And I know you guys enjoy this segment.
What in blue blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say blue blazes?
All right. So there have been a few stories that kind of popped up in blue blazes, man. I feel like we need to go ahead and just kind of get them on out the way. Talk about them, man. We had this one story come up and yo, man, this guy, like, keep taking L's for whatever reason. I don't know why, but, yeah. So, Tay Diggs has been making the rounds as of late. Tay Diggs of, you know, How Stella Got Her Groove Back fame and Best Man and Best Man Holiday. And I think he had, like, he had a brief show on, like, was that Private Practice or some shit like that. Tay Diggs has been one of those dudes who, like, he dates interracially, right? Nothing wrong with dating interracially. I think a lot of people make much to do about nothing when it comes. Well, I wouldn't say necessarily much to do about nothing. I do think that there's some political, you know, some political sorts of viewpoints that come up when people date interracially. But for the most part, man, when people date interracially, I have absolutely no problem with people dating interracially. If they're dating that person simply because they love that person and that person brings a level of comfort to them, that person brings them a level of stability and love and understanding. I don't particularly like when people date interracially, when they're trying to somehow scratch some sort of exotic itch or, like, you know, there is some sort of weird fetish where, like, you know, I feel like, or it's something on their bucket list to do. Like, I'm gonna be with a black woman or I'm gonna be with a white woman in order to fulfill some sort of, like, bucket list, checklist sort of thing. So, like, if you're with someone interracially and you love each other, it's genuine, and you built something together, man, by all means, man, continue to do that shit. Be beautiful together, right? Tay Diggs, on the other hand, he's been getting dragged, rightfully so, because Tay Diggs has been out here talking shit about the sisters, right? And so this story here comes out of Complex.com, and it says, Tay Diggs has recently used an appearance on Van Lathan's The Red Pill podcast to give his bizarre takes on who he will or won't date. First, a little bit of history. Diggs was married to Rent co-star Idina Menzel, who is white, for 11 years, but he claims he used to receive a lot of criticism for being with a white woman instead of a black woman. He is currently dating biracial actress and model Amanda Smith. So fast forward to today on the podcast, when Diggs went one step further and claimed that the stigma has made it so that he doesn't think he could ever date a white woman again. Let's run through that again. Diggs is blaming black women for the fact that he now feels he can no longer date white women. If you're rolling your eyes, you have a very popular reaction. Now, I've seen, like, you know, there's this thing, right? Especially when, like, when it comes to very attractive, like, you know, black male actors or whatever, when they do decide that they're going to date outside of the race, there's a level of disappointment that some sisters that will express, like, yo, damn, like, for real? You know, there's a level of disappointment sometimes, but not to the point where, you know, they're just like, ah, man, fuck these dudes. Fuck all they want is white women and everything else. Like, and I think sometimes that's something that can also be overblown where, you know, you'll get this sense of all these successful, attractive black men who get famous and get, you know, get a level of money and stardom that they automatically gravitate towards white women. When there's a lot of black dudes who are in these circles who are either dating or married to black women, they don't necessarily get as much publicity as they probably should, or it probably isn't much of, it's probably not much news because, hey, like people tend to date typically within their own group. Right. But There's a segment of women who have a sense of disappointment when they see that, like, you know, he's not, it doesn't seem as if he's interested in someone who may look like me, right? That's typically what it, that's typically where the disappointment comes from. But he's blaming black women's disappointment on him not being able to therefore continue to date white women, as if it was black women's responsibility to keep him from dating white women in the first place. That's stupid. That is fucking retarded. That is very retarded. Let's see. It says Lathan and Diggs start talking about this issue around the 23-minute mark above. So let's see, because there's video here. Let's see if we can pull this up. I'm going to, let's see, 23 minutes. Let's see if we can go ahead and do that. 23-minute mark. Let's play that now.
Your wife is white.
I know.
Okay. Wait, that's work too far
on these
back.
Different mm-hmm. award shows. Mm-hmm. They don't work on these movies. They feel mm-hmm. like they've graduated to something.
Or
you were dating or married to Idina uh-huh. Menzel.
Yes.
That entire uh-huh. time. I'm gonna be real with you.
you saw the nervous. And the head tilt. I'm like stealing myself.
Right. I'm gonna be real with you. So, okay. I remember the moment that my mother realized that your wife was white.
I know, that my white was wife.
I remember the moment my mother realized. My mother, and I never forget this because my mom is a hippie. And
see, it goes
like,
deep.
Like my mom is a hippie. My mom isn't like that. You know what I mean? I remember there was and she saw a picture and she goes, "That's his wife?" And I was like, I mean, yeah, they met. She goes, "Oh." I was like,
and
obviously we know what sisters go through. Yes.
It's a compliment, actually.
Yeah, yeah, you know, like what sisters go through and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When that came,
mm-hmm.
when you go from being mm-hmm. the love interest of Angela Bassett and the mm-hmm, love interest mm-hmm. of Sanaa Lathan mm-hmm. and all it is, when that came, how do you feel like that impacted your career?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I know.
Did it impact your career?
I don't know. I would like to think no, but I don't know. The movies that I didn't get, I don't know if directors or producers, you know, thought, okay, I would cast him in this movie.
I don't think it really affected his career. I mean,
salty.
Black women worse.
He's been hold on. I don't think it's been it affected his career. He's been able to pretty much like make much of a pretty decent career in black spaces. He's a staple in a lot of, you know, very popular movies with black ensemble cast. Despite the fact that he was married to a white woman, it did not affect his career. It didn't. Taye Diggs has not been at a point where he could not find work because he was married or dating a white woman. And the suggestion, because it looks like this is going to be a really long segment and I don't want to play this too much longer, but the suggestion that because he was dating or married to a white woman that it affected his career is, one, insulting, and two, again, if you're talking about you're not able to date white women because black women's because of black women's reaction to it, therefore putting the onus on them for why you're doing what you're doing when the choice that you have is yours and yours alone, it's kind of weak, bruh. It's kind of fucking weak. And I, again, if you're marrying these people, if you love these people, for who they are, for what they bring to your life, how they make you feel. If it isn't, if there are genuine feelings behind that, then by all means, go ahead, go about the business of doing that. But if you're using white women to get back at black women, or to throw it in their faces that, okay, I don't need you, then man, fuck you, man. They have every right to feel the way that they do. They have every right to feel the way that they do. And like, you know, it's kind of weak, man. It's weak sauce like a motherfucker for a nigga to go out here and talk about, yo, I'm going to date these white girls and these black women are trying to make me feel ashamed of how I feel about dating these white women. Like, no, dude, like, yo, they express some disappointment. You're a heartthrob in the community, dude. They express some disappointment in the fact that, like, that was your choice. And then for you to therefore, like, kind of make it out like it's their fault that you can't date white women no more. Like, who's crying for you right now? Nobody. Nobody. So yeah, man, that was in Blue Blazes, man. Fuck Taye Diggs. Right? That was in Blue Blazes. Another thing that's in what in Blue Blazes, man. We got another story, man. This is actually kind of wild. This is really wild, man. So we got this story here, man, and it's actually the reason why I decided to name this episode the way that I did. Because a woman found, check this out, $150,000 in a wallet, and it became one of the worst decisions of her life. Now, we're going to try to figure out exactly how finding $150,000 becomes the worst decision anyone's ever made. So, as a matter of fact, let me pull up this screen share so I can share this guy with you guys in the chat and we can watch this together. So, yeah, there we go. There's like the kaleidoscope of me and shit. And we're going to play this video. Check this out, y'all.
Here's the situation. She thought she found a wallet with $150,000 in it and decided, well, you know, finders keepers.
Yeah, but what she thought was good fortune for her turned out to be a huge mistake. Jenna Sachs explains in this Contact 6 report.
I was completely fooled.
This woman, who asked we not reveal her identity, says she's filled with regret.
I just regret being a part of it.
She says she was walking through a parking lot on Blue Mound Road in Brookfield last Saturday when a woman called out to her.
She asked me if I had dropped something.
She says the woman held up a wallet filled with cash.
It was brown. It almost looked like the size of a brick.
They called over a third woman to take a look.
Hold up, nigga. A wallet the size of a brick, nigga? Like, nigga, come on.
Decided to keep the money and split it three ways.
Well, finders keepers then, huh?
The woman who found the wallet said she worked at First Weber Realtors. She said her office had a money counting machine and that her boss would help them draw up paperwork to keep the money legally.
Hold up. Okay. So, as we're to understand it, this woman didn't actually find the wallet. Some other woman found the wallet and called her over to where the wallet was and asked her, was it hers? Okay. Okay.
The three women drove together to the office, parked in the back, and the woman who found the wallet walked inside. She came back out with unbelievable news.
That there was $150,000 in cash in the wallet.
But in order to get the money, she said all three women had to provide some cash to prove they were financially responsible.
Okay. There it is. There it is.
So they drove to Educators Credit Union.
I walked to my bank and withdrew the money.
Back at First Weber Realty, they parked behind the building again. This woman says one at a time, the other two women walked around the building and came back with stacks of what looked like real cash. Then it was this woman's turn.
That's when it hit me that something was wrong.
Inside First Weber, no one knew what she was talking about. Meanwhile, the car and the other two women disappeared, along with her $2,000.
The whole thing is horrendous.
Brookfield police are investigating. A spokesman tells me he'd never heard of this type of scam before. I also spoke with a representative of First Weber Realty, who tells me no one by that woman's name or description works for them. The victim says she spent 3 hours with the alleged scammers, and while she's now broke, she's grateful she wasn't hurt. I'm Jenna Sachs, Contact 6.
All right, man. Damn. That's fucked up. Okay, so here's the thing. Like, I think it's I think for one thing, like it's unfortunate because this woman kind of comes across as maybe an older lady, and people are targeting, you know, a lot of senior citizens with some, you know, with these savvy ass scams to where, you know, like you give up this information, or if you pay X amount of dollars and you too can be a part of this this money making scheme that we got going on, or you know, like any sort of little thing, man, like they're really convincing in their sales pitch. One of the things that kind of caught me off guard right off the bat was like, yo, somebody finds $150,000 in a wallet and you calling other motherfuckers over there to the wallet to see whether or not it was theirs or not. Like, I get it, like the whole Good Samaritan sort of hook to it. But I'm going to be honest, man. I don't have enough faith in people to believe that, like, yo, somebody going to drop $150,000, $150,000 wallet. Well, a wallet with $150,000 in it. They find this wallet and then they flagging people down like, hey, is this your shit? Like, I don't have faith in people to do that. Like, I just don't. Like, I don't believe that motherfuckers is out here doing it. Like, yo, $150,000, nigga, find this keeper. Somebody's lost. Niggas is going, it's cash money. Cash money, like they don't got to go to like no ATM or nothing like that. The money is right there. I think most people, unfortunately, I think most people would just walk away with that shit. Like, yo, man, I came up today. The Lord was blessing me. The Lord saw my plight and he heard my cries and he blessed us with this $150,000 to take care of the car note and to take care of the house. Baby, we made it. The Lord came through, right? Like, I think that's how most motherfuckers are going to really operate. They're going to take their money and they're going to roll out. So they bring this woman over and they're like, yo, we got to go to this place where, you know, they're going to write up some paperwork to make sure that we can keep the money legally and all this other stuff. Again, this find this keepers. If you found this money and there's no way for people to trace it, why would you need anybody to, you know, to sign, like fill out some paperwork for you to be able to keep the money legally? Then the other part of it was, yo, you got to put up some money to get some of this money that you found. Like, nah, man, where they do that at? Like, nah, nigga, like, hold up. I found this. Now, if I can get, either I can keep it or I can't. But I'm not about to give up some of my money to keep some money that I done found. Nigga, when was the last time you found, like, $5 on the street and they're like, hey, man, well, you got to give me a dub in order to keep that $5. Like, nigga, get the fuck out of here. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not how that works. So it's unfortunate that that happened to that lady, man. But this is a, like, finest keepers going wrong like a motherfucker, man. Like, this lady is out of $2,000. These women scammed the hell out of her, dude. Like, I hate that it happened to her. I do. I really do. But I want people to also be a little bit more scrutiny, like scrutinize motherfuckers a lot better than, yo, I'm excited about the prospect of this $150,000. Now, I know it's easy for me to say on this mic and shit because ain't nobody came up to me talking about, hey, man, I found this wallet with $150,000 in it. You want some? Like, nobody's doing that for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I can use, you know, some cash. I like money. You know, I like that shit. But yeah, man, it's unfortunate that that happened to that lady, man. And hopefully, man, this is kind of keep y'all on y'all P's and Q's to where it doesn't happen to you, man. So that's part of the reason why we share these stories, too. As much as, you know, we don't want to make fun of people who get scammed in this way, it's also a way to, like, kind of, you know, like, hey, man, this is happening. Motherfuckers is finding all sorts of crazy ways to get you up out of your hard-earned money. So, yeah, man, go about the business of being safe and being smart operating out here in these streets, man. Real talk. Another story that's in the Blue Blazers, man. We had a lot of stuff happen, man. So check this out, man. R. Kelly is out here getting evicted out of houses all the way out in Atlanta. What? Wait. Say that again, man. Uh-oh. That was... I'm fucking up all the way around over here. But what? Yeah, R. Kelly got fucking evicted out of like 3 houses and shit in Atlanta. So this story here comes out of Fox... Fox 13 Memphis. And this says filings with the magistrate court of Fulton County from February 13th show that the Grammy-winning R&B singer R. Kelly has been evicted from 2 homes in Atlanta. The R&B singer was renting houses in the city's John Creek neighborhood. The document showed that Kelly owes SB Property Management Global, LLC, more than $31,000 in past due rent payments. $31,000. That's a whole lot of motherfucking money. It says online records for Fulton County don't show any criminal filings against Kelly. A spokesperson for the singer, Travian Cootie, told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that Kelly has no comment at this time on the disposory affidavits filed against him. When reached by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution on Monday, Edmund Green of SB Property Management Global, LLC, said he could not comment on the filings. The court documents carry Green's signature as the affiant. According to the court documents, the homes Kelly has been evicted from are in Old Homestead Trail and St. Devin Crossing. These were the same homes that were reportedly burglarized in 2017. A former associate of Kelly's, Alfonso L. Walker, was accused of breaking into them and selling many of the items inside. Walker, 50, was arrested in December and charged with theft and burglary. Court filings show that Kelly paid $3,000 per month to rent in St. Devin Crossing and $11,542 per month to rent in Old Homestead Trail. The homes are 2 miles apart and have Duluth addresses. The St. Devin Crossing home is in a cul-de-sac off Rogers Bridge Road. The Old Homestead Trail home is in a gated community off Bell Ridge, off Bell Road. Google images show a pool and the basketball court behind the home. Now, check this out. I'm not in the pocket watching. I don't do that. I think it's abhorrent, and you know it's tax season now, and a lot of people are doing that. I don't think that's something that people should do. I would say though. Well, I would ask why, if home ownership is, you know, kind of saves you money, why R. Kelly isn't like buying these houses in the ATL as opposed to paying that exorbitant ass rent payment that he's paying. I mean, that's one question that I'm asking. Also, another question that could be asked is, I wonder if the boycotts are starting to have an effect on R. Kelly's earning potential, right? Because we talk all the time about, and I've said this before, you know, I'm not a fan of R. Kelly. I don't listen to R. Kelly anymore. I used to be when I was younger and before I knew all this shit about him. But like, I wonder if the potential for R. Kelly to bring in the monies in which he's able to afford these sorts of properties has now started to dwindle, because you're like, a lot of people have started to turn against R. Kelly and away from R. Kelly because they know so much about R. Kelly now, right? Like before, like there weren't any like organized, you know, like boycotting, you know, campaigns going on with his concerts, because, you know, typically, like, you know, his concerts were being sold out and, you know, he'd go from city to city, and he still has fans, no doubt. He still has fans and people still go out to go see him despite everything that everyone knows about him. They still go out and they'll go patronize his concerts and they'll buy his albums and everything else. But I do wonder how much of those numbers have started to dwindle to the point where R. Kelly is starting to have a cash flow problem. And he's being evicted from homes and, well, two homes in Atlanta. You know, maybe R. Kelly was thinking that the rent wasn't nothing but a number and paying that shit wasn't nothing but a thing. I'm just saying, like, maybe it could have been that. It could have been that. Maybe R. Kelly was like, hey, man, I'm R. Kelly, man. I can make this back up. I ain't, you know, it ain't no thing. But like, yo, he's got evicted from two homes. It's a whole lot of people that's making a whole lot less money than R. Kelly today. Ain't never been evicted from nothing. You know what I'm saying? Pay your bills, dog. Pay your bills. I wonder what R. Kelly's credit rating is looking like. Like, I wonder if he's got like a 598 credit score or some shit because of I'm sorry. I don't know. I don't like R. Kelly, man. So I always wish the worst on that nigga. Like, I'm sorry. I chop that nigga up and throw him in the motherfucking Chicago River for all I'm concerned. Lake Michigan. I'm sorry. Just, I don't care. But yeah. That happened. Yeah, but that is that has been What in Blue Blazes, man.
What in blue blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say blue blazes?
All right, so we got some stuff that's going on in the news, man. So we're going to go ahead and start doing our news segment. All right, so first thing we got up in the news, man, this is some tech shit. You know, I'm a real tech geek and whatnot. I'm always into the phones and the computers and really like the consumer electronic gadgets and stuff like that. I'm really heavy into that shit. So one of these things, this story here kind of like piqued my interest quite a bit. And it's a story about Google flexes muscles with new ad blocking rules and some smaller players are concerned about its power, right? So as you know, sometimes when I'm doing the show, man, like I'll have videos queued up or I have certain like websites queued up so that I can read off of these articles or sometimes play the videos off of these articles so that I can present the these stories to you guys. And you'll have like videos that are like have ads that play before I can even do anything, right? Like I got the website pulled up, I haven't hit anything, and a video just starts playing. It's happened a few times here on the show. So what Google is doing with its Chrome browser is actually trying to put a curb on things like that. So we're going to read this story here. This comes out of CNBC.com. And it says that earlier this week, Google rolled out new filtering policies for its Chrome browser that will block all advertising on websites that serve particularly annoying ads like autoplay videos with sound or full page pop-ups. I hate them shits. Excuse me. It says the idea behind this move is pretty straightforward. If users don't have to deal with intrusive ad experiences, they may be less likely to download third-party ad blockers. And I do have Ad Blocker Plus on my Chrome browser. I just do. Like, I hate fucking ads. It says ad blockers crush revenue opportunities for websites that rely on ads to make money while also affecting the bottom line of ad providers like Google, which pays a fee to whitelist its ads and popular service like Adblock Plus. While Chrome's new policy is widely lauded, Google's dominance of the online ads business, in conjunction with the dominance of its Chrome browser and its influence on the group that selected which ads count as intrusive, raised some thorny questions. Now, I use Chrome. I remember at one point in time, like using Netscape Navigator. You know, I'm dating myself going way back. Netscape Navigator, I used to use at one point Firefox. Firefox used to be one of my favorite browsers. Internet Explorer, never really like using Internet Explorer. It comes with your computer or whatever and it works, but you know, like it was very limited, you know. And I know Microsoft has come out with Internet Edge or some shit like that. I don't use it. I go right back to Chrome. Chrome has like pretty much become the thing to use for me when it comes to internet usage, like because it ties into like I'm kind of tied into that Google ecosystem with the Android shit and the you know, everything, like all of it works together. All these services just kind of tie in together. And so with Chrome, you know, like I use it and like it's become convenient in a way in which it like kind of blocks a lot of the ads, especially with Adblock Plus on there, right? Now, some websites have started getting to the point where they're like, hey, we noticed you got you got an ad blocker on your browser. Could you whitelist it so that we can like show you this content? Because now they're getting to the point where like they don't want to actually show you the content until you take your ad blocker off. Now, I get that a lot of places like, you know, like a lot of websites, they get a lot of money. They generate a lot of the revenue through their ads. I get that, like, even with commercials on television, like a lot of the television shows that you watch, the reason you're able to watch them for free is because they are advertisers who are advertising during those shows. Like, hell, I know VH1 pulling in all the motherfucking advertising dollars because they shows have 1,000 goddamn commercials, right? I am one of those people who will pay to not watch commercials, right? I got Hulu. And I pay for the ability on Hulu to not watch commercials. I have Netflix. I'm paying for the ability to not watch commercials. On my Xfinity, like if I could do live TV this way, I would fast forward through the live fucking commercials. I hate commercials. I don't need to be sold this shit a lot of times, right? Like I understand that they got to do their thing. But it's intrusive as hell. And like it takes away from the web experience that a lot of people have when they get on your website and the first thing that pops up is this big ass ad like, hey, subscribe. Like, nigga, I'm here already. Like, chill out. Right? So I appreciate Google doing this. Although I'm also keenly aware that Google is in the advertising business and it may not necessarily affect Google in the ways that it's going to affect everybody else. So we're going to continue to read this article. It says, while Chrome's new policy is widely lauded, Wait, I already read that part. It says, one company deciding what we see. Chrome has determined the 12 ad types which will trigger its ad blocking system based on standards set by the Coalition for Better Ads and Industry group where Google is a board member. However, several members of the Coalition of Better Ads told the Wall Street Journal that they felt that Google had undue influence over the committee's actions because it spearheaded the research used to determine the intrusive ad types. For example, YouTube's pre-roll video ads weren't included in research or intrusive ad types, which Johnny Ryan, the head of ecosystem at PageFair, a company that helps publishers protect against ad blocking, calls a remarkable omission. Now, full disclosure, like, I pay for Google Play Music. Me paying for Google Play Music actually keeps a lot of those YouTube ads from showing up at all. I don't get YouTube ads because I use Google Play Music. That's one way to kind of get around it. If you're willing and you're able to pay for the omission of these ads, a lot of these places will allow you to do so. That's one way to do it. If you get Google Play Music or you pay for YouTube Red, you can bypass the ads on those YouTube videos by and large. One of the things I've been thinking is very interesting lately is that, like, a lot of Facebook videos have advertisements in them and you can't skip them. You can't go past them. You'll watch, like, you know, and not only that, it's like you'll watch the first 3 minutes of a video on Facebook and then all of a sudden there's this ad in the middle of the shit and it's like, man, what the fuck is this? Facebook is starting to try to become television. Like, it's annoying as hell, man. Like, I get it. These people want you to, they want to sell you shit, but goddamn, like, could you come up with a better, more intuitive way or a better, more innovative way to make people aware of what you're doing as opposed to interrupting the shit they're really interested in. It says, though Chrome's ad blocker is a welcome improvement for users, it is not surprising that website owners are aghast that ads are being cleaned up on their sites while Google's own formats go unharmed, he told CNBC. Google told Wall Street Journal that it plans to test video ad formats in the future. Meanwhile, some believe that the sheer scale of Google's business make this move feel a bit like it's playing God with what users will or will not see online. Now, I can tell you this, man. As a user, I don't like to see ads. And I know a lot of people in their web experience, they hate intrusive ads, man. Like they want to go to a website. They want to get to the content that they want to see. If you're going to have ads on the side along with that, yeah, a lot of people will probably tolerate that. But when you start flashing shit on the screen, when you start having videos pop up on the screen and the sound just starts blaring out and they're like, man, what the fuck? And you got to find where it is on the screen in order to shut it the fuck up. Like, people don't like that. And what they need to do as opposed to, although they can do both of these things at the same time. You can be mad at Google for what Google is doing, and you can also be more innovative in how you present your advertisement content, right? You can chew gum and walk at the same time, and I think a lot of these advertisers need to go about the business of doing that. Stop, like, being so intrusive with the ads, man. Get customers, the people who you are trying to sell it to, don't like it. They don't like it, and if they did like it, Google wouldn't be doing this, what they're doing right now. So, yeah, man, that's going on in the news. Another thing, interesting thing that's been going on in the news. We know that Black Panther, and we spent last week's Black Panther episode. Like, last week was a Black Panther episode. That's all we did was talk about Black Panther. But there's an interesting thing going on with Black Panther, right? So this actually is almost a month old, but I haven't had a chance to speak to it. But there was a petition that wanted the Black Panther movie to donate 25% of the profits from that movie and invest it into Black communities. Now, I get it. There are people who saw this as an opportunity. They saw that Black people were galvanized to support this movie. They saw that Black people were excited to see this movie succeed. They saw that Black people were, there were a lot of Black people who weren't even affiliated with this movie who came up with t-shirts and slogans and all sorts of things and selling merchandise based on the excitement of what this movie has been able to create, right? And they decided, like, yo, we're going to be a part of the jumping off of, we're going to be a part of this whole enthusiastic reception to this movie, right? And so I'm going to read from this article. This comes from complex.com, and it says that Marvel's upcoming film, like I said, this was before the movie even came out. But it says Marvel's upcoming film, Black Panther, has a lot of things going for it. Stellar reviews from critics, a killer soundtrack produced by Kendrick Lamar, and records broken at the box office before the movie's even been released. Now, as of right now, that movie is like inching towards $1 billion. A billion dollars made worldwide for that film. It says it's no secret that the movie, although Marvel's 18th entry into a cinematic universe, has something different going on than most other superhero movies. Nearly the entire cast is black, not to mention that it is it tells a distinctly black story, making it a historic entry into the world of superhero movies and cinema in general. However, a Change.org petition is asking, what exactly will the black community gain aside from another symbolic victory? The petition asks for Marvel to invest 25% of its worldwide profits in black communities and programs within these communities that focus on STEM educational programs. It's a noble petition, but a very high ask of Marvel as well. For a movie that's expected to break $120 million at the box office just on its opening day, 25% of profits is no small amount of money. Nevertheless, Chaz Gormley, the author of the petition, has not come without his receipts. Now, check this out. I get it. Like I said, I get it. People wanted to, like, people tie this into voter registration drives. People tie this into, you know, making business opportunities for themselves when it came to designs for T-shirts. And we saw, like, one of these Killmonger shirts that was going around with the Hey Auntie on it. Like, that design had been stolen from another artist and everything. And people were just running with shit. Like, people were running the gamut with things that they wanted to do surrounding this movie, right? But the interesting thing about this is that I'm trying to understand, like, why we weren't making the same ask of a movie like, say, for instance, A Birth of a Nation. Why we weren't making these sort of asks for movies such as, 12 Years a Slave. Like, we weren't making it. Is it that we know this movie was going to make a lot of money? Is that what it was? Is that, like, we want to attach the amount of earning potential of the excitement surrounding this movie and saying, like, hey, because y'all are so excited about this, we need to take this money and we need y'all to take y'all money that y'all making, and we need y'all to go ahead and put y'all money over here, right? We don't make these same asks for everyone else, or even the other movies that black people were supposed to go see, right? Like Birth of a Nation. Like, there was the contingent of brothers who were like, yo, we need to go see this movie despite the fact that Nate Parker was, you know, implicated in a rape crime and, like, excoriated people who decided, like, yo, man, I don't necessarily know if I can separate this dude from his real life actions, and I don't know if I can still support this movie after finding out this information, right? So, like, it's an amazing ask for you to come out of your face and be like, hey, man, so y'all making all this money, y'all need to give this money to such and such, such and such. It's like, it's almost like this crazy ass meme I just saw today about, yo, y'all spent all this money to go see Black Panther, but y'all couldn't give Umar Johnson money to go build a school. Like, man, get the fuck out of my face. Like, simply be like, there's this thing about simply because somebody is black and they have an ass, that because they're black and they have an ass, that we're supposed to just get up on off our ass and just do it. Like, no, nigga, that's not how this works. That's not how any of this shit works. And people were excited about this film. One, because it was the first black superhero film with a major budget in which the story was being told. It was filmed in a black city. It was had a black director. It had an all black cast. It had a black screenwriter. Like, it was a exciting time for black people to kind of just enjoy themselves, enjoy the majesty, enjoy the imagination, enjoy the story around this film. And then to have people place fucking start placing moving the goalposts, so to speak, you know, like, as to what this means for black people. Like, people talking about how this is an empty victory because you didn't get this and you didn't get that. And, like, I've had arguments with niggas talking about, well, you know, this movie is, Disney owns this movie, so all y'all doing is giving all y'all money to Disney. It's like, nigga, did you know that Fox Searchlight bought the rights to fucking Birth of a Nation? And here you was, not even a year ago, telling everybody, like, yo, we need to see this movie. You didn't give a damn that Rupert Murdoch really owned that fucking movie, right? So it's like the level of hypocrisy, the level of, like, goalposts moving with a lot of it. Because I really, like, as much as this would seem like, it's an admirable. It's an admirable ask. It's one that they won't ask for. Like, why won't you just ask Disney for money for STEM cell or STEM educational program? Why won't you do that? Why is it that for this film that we have to put all of our eggs on this? It's like, why can't black people, and I dream of this, like, why can't we excel for the sense of excelling? Like, we place all of our hopes and all of our dreams on the backs of a few, right? And a lot of it, like, I'm not even saying it in the sense that it's our fault, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of it is because we haven't been seeing ourselves in these lights for so long, and we haven't been seeing ourselves in these places as a common thing. But what happens with that is, like, yo, so many people latch onto this as the only thing. Like, you have to represent for everything and everybody. And that's an impossible fucking task. And it's so impossible that you got somebody like, yo, man, whatever you make, nigga, you need to give up 25% of that and give it to these people over here. Right? I don't know. I feel like it's an unreasonable thing to just ask of a movie, because a lot of people, especially a lot of black people, are excited about this film. And they're excited about it for not only the tangible things in which you think that, like, the tangible things in which you think aren't happening, because there's a lot of makeup designers or makeup artists or costume designers and directors and actors and, you know, even the people behind the scenes, like the grips and all sorts of, like, studios, like Tyler Perry studios, like, black people are having tangible things happen because of films like this. And it doesn't necessarily mean that because you don't see it happening over here, that nothing's happening. I think a lot of times, man, people fall into that. Like, I don't see it happening, therefore it's not happening. It's like, no, that's not how this works. Sometimes things are happening and you have no fucking clue what's going on. You don't see oxygen, but you breathing that shit every day, my nigga. You know? So I felt like it was an unreasonable kind of ask. Now, I know a lot of people won't necessarily agree with that, but I felt like that was an unreasonable ask to think that because this movie was going to be popular and it was going to make a lot of money, that they off top should give 25% to this program because you asked for it and because black people were excited about it and supported it. Like, I just felt like that was a bit much to ask of anybody. Like, if I came into a lot of money, for whatever reason, I do have certain obligations to the people that I love and the people around me, but I'd be goddamn if some motherfucker that I never seen in my life demands that he gets 25% of that shit, fuck out my face. Like, just how I feel about it. So yeah, man, we got that going on. That was in the news. Another thing that was in the news, and this is actually in the news recently, man. So Rick Ross he's been in the hospital, man. So I'm reading this story. This here comes out of TMZ. I also read a story. It was coming out of Us Weekly, man. They were real messy in how they were reporting that shit. But this story here comes out of TMZ. It says Rick Ross has been hooked up to a machine that's taking over the function of his heart and lungs. According to sources connected to the music mogul, Rick is in Miami area hospital getting treatment in the cardiac unit, a strong sign he might have suffered a heart attack, which manifested itself as respiratory issues early Thursday morning. TMZ broke the story. Rick was rushed to a hospital after a 911 caller reported he was unresponsive. He was unresponsive and slobbing at the mouth. We're told doctors have put him on something called ECMO, or extracorporeal membrane oxygenation. It's a technique used to oxygenate his blood inside of his body before it's pumped back into his body. It's essentially a form of life support and a clear sign of how dire Rick's situation is right now. Now, we don't wish any harm on anybody, man. Like, I know we kind of joked about a lot of the music that Rick Ross produces. A lot of it is like, yo, you know, he took this other man's name that we all know who he is. A lot of his music is steeped in, you know, like the drug, you know, like the drug kingpin life, right? Like, we, like, dude, this is not who you are. We know you were, you know, corrections officer. You know, we know you are in the beef with like 50 Cent and everything else. Like, but ultimately, like, some of this music, man, I really do like. Like, I've kind of gotten past the fact that, like, yo, some of this shit is, I know he lying, but this shit sound good. This shit jamming, right? And it goes into another thing too, man. We've seen a few of our hip hop artists, man, like, who were like in the whole thing of like drinking promethazine and like taking Molly and all sorts of stuff like that, and having these sorts of issues. Lil Wayne was dealing with this same thing, like having seizures and like passing out and stuff like that. Like, yo, man, that shit catches up with you. Real talk, man. And, you know, unfortunately, man, this is it seems like this is an example of it catching up with Rick Ross. Hopefully everything works out well for him and he's able to recover from this. I saw an Instagram post where someone affiliated with Rick Ross saying he's all right, that TMZ is overblowing shit. That could be the case, man. But yeah, man, I hope that everything's all right with Rick Ross or whatever, man. That would be a very unfortunate thing to happen for somebody who's, you know, kind of been like, if you really want to say, like, he's a self-made millionaire, man. Like, despite the fact that I don't necessarily think that he's on the up and up about how, you know, his entertainment persona. Yo, man, it would be real fucked up if, like, that dude checked out at this particular point in time, man. Real talk. So, man, prayers up for Rick Ross, man. Hopefully that dude recovers and recovers soon, man. Another story that I want to talk about in the news, man, and this is actually something that has been in the news for the last couple of weeks, and that is it's related to the Parkland High School shooting down in Florida, right? So this story here is actually about Walmart and Dick's. It says that Dick's Sporting Goods. It says that two of the nation's leading gun sellers, Walmart and Dick's Sporting Goods, took steps on Wednesday to limit their sales of firearms, thrusting themselves into the middle of the polarizing national debate over gun control. Walmart, the biggest gun seller, announced late in the afternoon that it would not sell any gun to anyone under 21 years of age. It also said that it would no longer sell items resembling assault rifles, including toys and air guns. Excuse me. It said earlier in the day, Dick said that it was immediately ending sales of all assault-style rifles in its stores. The retailer also said that it would no longer sell high-capacity magazines and would also require any gun buyer to be at least 21 years of age, regardless of local laws. Under federal law, a person must be at least 21 to buy a handgun from a firearms dealer, but 18-year-olds can buy semi-automatic rifles and other firearms. The dual announcement made 2 weeks after 17 students and staff members were killed in the school shooting in Parkland, Florida, were among the most significant actions taken on guns by corporate America. Both retailers said that their decision were a response to the shooting. Earlier, that dude Trump met at the White House with a bipartisan group of lawmakers and called for a series of gun control measures, some of which the National Rifle Association has vigorously opposed. You know what? Like I said, good for them, right? Good for Walmart. Good for Dick's Sporting Goods. They've taken a stand, you know, for what they believe as a corporation, as a company. This is something that they believe in. And like, yo, you know, after this happened, we don't want to sell these sorts of firearms anymore. We don't want to low key, if we're really talking like public, like perception, we don't want to it be found out that what happened with one of these weapons was sold from one of our stores. Right. And that's how, like, the cynic in me is, that's really how I'm taking this. I don't think they're doing this out of any sort of like moral standing or any sort of real like empathy for those, you know, for the victims of what happened in Parkland. That's just how I feel about it. I kind of feel like they're doing it as a way, like, if something else happens, they don't want to be the store for which that weapon was sold, because of the way in which people are reacting to this right now. Right now, as you guys know, we've talked about this a lot here on this show, man. Like, I am a gun owner. I own AR-15s, plural, right? I've tried to stay out of this discussion. And part of the reason why I've tried to stay out of this discussion is because as the years have gone by and more of these actions have started to take place, I feel like, you know, a lot of the middle ground as far as gun ownership and the types of firearms that people use or own, I feel like a lot of the middle ground in these discussions no longer really exist, right? Like, you're either for this or you're against this, and you're a bad person if you don't, you know, if you don't, you know, fall in line with either side, right? And as someone in the middle of this, right, I listen to both sides sometimes and think like, man, y'all motherfuckers sound crazy, right? And this is just me. you know, like, I listen to, you know, pundits on television. I like the NRA comes on TV and I'm just like, man, these motherfuckers sound crazy. And at one point I used to be a member of the NRA. I remember I joined the NRA right after I got arrested in Chicago for my gun. And like, I did that thinking like, yo, maybe if push come to shove, I can go to the NRA to help me with a lawyer to help me fight this bullshit case that's going on. Now, ultimately I was able to do that by myself, right? I didn't even need the NRA, and the NRA was like always was constantly sending me mailings about Obama trying to take my guns and Hillary Clinton trying to take my guns away from me. And meanwhile, I bought more guns under both of them, right? Neither one of them were really trying to take my guns away from me. And ultimately, after Obama left office, I still had my guns. Like, that's not what it was. And it became a thing with the NRA. It was like, okay, we no longer have the boogeyman of Obama, and we no longer have the boogeywoman of Hillary Clinton to scare these people into thinking that their guns are going to be taken away from them. So now we got to try to figure out a way to keep these people buying guns, right? And I said this, like, I even made a video on YouTube, like I said this on the podcast, man, like I kind of broke down the reasons why the NRA was on some bullshit, the reasons why I left the NRA and said fuck the NRA and wouldn't join an organization like that ever again. Like, because ultimately it was about gun sales for them. And it's been very interesting, especially like as I talk about, like, just going to, like, the right. You know, when we talk about the hard right politically when it comes to guns, man, it's been very interesting to see so many of these motherfuckers who talked about that were so, like, they're pro-police, right? They're so pro-police. They're so pro-troops and all this other stuff. And then it become a thing where they're willing to fight the police. They're willing to fight these same troops with these guns that they say their right to have, right? And so suddenly it's the fault of the police that this shooter was able to get these guns. It's the fault of the police and the FBI for not following up on the background checks. It's the fault of the police and the FBI for being so involved in investigating Trump that they couldn't actually catch this dude before he was able to get this thing and this gun and let these things happen, right? It's been interesting to watch this conversation shift to where the same people who were pro Blue Lives Matter, even though blue lives do not fucking exist, these same Blue Lives Matter people going in on law enforcement, right? Going in. And for the most part, it's not that they don't care about law enforcement. Law enforcement is a useful tool if they can keep black people in check for a lot of these motherfuckers. If the law enforcement, the FBI, the police, the sheriffs, even the military, if these military and like law enforcement folks can keep black people and Hispanic people in check, then by all means, man, we need to support them. We need to support the troops. Blue lives matter, right? That's the only time it fucking counts. But when law enforcement is actually enforcing said laws on white folks and some of these hard right motherfuckers, like, that's when suddenly blue lives don't matter. That's when fuck these troops, don't tread on me, right? They don't give a damn about what happens to people of color, what happens to black and brown folks here in America when it comes to gun rights, right? We saw that with Philando Castile. They didn't even speak on Philando Castile's behalf. As a matter of fact, they made it out to where it was like, yo, it was his fault that he got shot. Despite the fact that Philando Castile was out here giving every fucking information he could, letting that officer know, like, yo, I got my gun in the car with me, man. I'm licensed to carry. My gun is in the car with me. I had to have that conversation with the police plenty of times. The last time I got pulled over was right after Philando Castile, and I had my gun in the car with me, and I was scared shitless, yo. I shouldn't have to be, but I was. So there's a level of hypocrisy on the right that I don't ascribe to. Like, I'm under no illusions that my ownership of an AR-15 is going to keep the police or keep the government from treading on my rights, right? Like, we keep these firearms because, you know, if we ever have to rise up against the government, like, yo, look, check this out. The government is killing motherfuckers thousands of miles away. People were killing, like, were giving Obama the business on the left because Obama was out here, like, killing people with drone strikes, killing terrorists with drone strikes, right? What makes you think that your AR-15 is going to stop a drone strike? What makes you think that your AR-15 is going to stop a Tomahawk missile? What makes you think that your AR-15 is going to stop a tank from rolling over your fucking house? It's just not going to happen, man. It's just not. Right? I am under no illusions that my AR-15, the one that I own for home defense, is going to stop any of that shit. That's why it's never been one of my reasons for owning an AR-15. My AR-15 has always been for home defense. Home defense. People would say, like, yo, you could use a shotgun for home defense. Yeah, that's a choice. And some people have made that choice for themselves to use a shotgun for home defense. And by all means, I'm not mad at you. I chose an AR-15. Right? Why do you need an AR-15? Like, I don't necessarily need an AR-15. It's a nice tool for home defense. Right? And it's a choice that I made for me and my family. That's all the justification that I need for me. Like, I think a lot of this has become, we start trying to justify this for other people's comfort. And it's not about other people's comfort for me. This is about the comfort of me and mine. You don't have to come to my home. As a matter of fact, if you're uninvited and you decide to, you're just going to, like, be in my house. And I told you, like I feel sorry for the motherfucker who feels like he's going to break into my house like that. I want him to feel like this was the worst motherfucking decision I ever made in my life. The worst decision I ever made. I don't ever want to make this kind of stupid decision again. Right? So on the right, I'm like, yo, there's a lot of hypocrisy going on with that. Like, yo, y'all don't give a damn about whether or not you're able to own these weapons for governmental tyranny, or even if black people or brown people, if, like, we got these weapons, like, yo, you're perfectly willing for us to be disarmed, right? Like, so long as your rights are protected, fuck everybody else who's got these guns and everything else. That's why I didn't believe the NRA. I take that back. At one point, I did. When it came to Otis McDonald in Chicago, and the NRA took Otis McDonald's, he was an older black man in Chicago, 85, I believe, at the time of his lawsuit, where he wanted to have something other than a rifle, because the laws in Chicago stated that you had to have a rifle in your home, that you were not permitted to use a handgun in Chicago or own a handgun in the Chicago city, in the city of Chicago. And they took that plight all the way up to the Supreme Court of the United States, where the Supreme Court deemed that law unconstitutional. And now Otis McDonald can own a firearm or a handgun in his home. Now that just opened it up to everybody in Chicago can now own handguns. It wasn't about Otis McDonald being able to protect his home. It was Otis McDonald is going to be a window into us being able to sell more handguns in that city. That's what that was. Right? So there's a lot of hypocrisy on the right. But then on the left of it, I'm looking at it, and a lot of our angst over the last, a lot of the angst from the left has been about governmental, a lot of it has been about the government not protecting the rights of all citizens. A lot of it has been about our distrust of institutions like the police. And our distrust in institutions like the FBI and the feds and everything else. Like, a lot of it has been about, we don't trust these people to have our better interest at heart. We don't trust these people to protect our rights. So I look at some of the consternation on the left, like, girl, nobody should be able to have these guns, and nobody should be able to own a firearm. We should just get rid of all the guns. And usually the only motherfucker who tends to have the guns, even if you follow that model, even if the only people who will have the guns are the very people who you don't seem to fucking trust right now. Right? We don't trust the government. I don't trust the police. I don't trust the FBI to keep me in, like, if I don't trust these people, I'll be goddamned if I'm gonna leave my safety and I'm gonna leave all that up to them, right? Even though it's their job, I don't trust them to the point where I'm solely leaving it up to them. Fuck that. No, that's not how I'm rolling. If I don't trust these people to have my better interests at heart, how the fuck am I going to trust these people to protect me? I don't. And that's part of the reason why I carry. And not only that, I mean, think about it. Some of the political views that I have, some of the things that I say about, say, for instance, Donald Trump and some of the people who ascribe to the political, you know, documents, you know, like his mantra, the people who really fuck with him, like the things that I say, I'm on fucking YouTube, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Crowdcast. Like, you can see my face. I'm not hiding. But at the same time, like, when I go out, I don't know what's on a motherfucker's mind, man. I don't. And I want to be able to protect myself. Now, there's the other argument of like, yo, you know, having these guns or whatever, you know, you don't need XYZ gun or whatever. We've had that argument. You know, you may not even get, you know, somebody may get a drop on you, even if you had your gun. Like, I've seen the memes where, like, Chris Kyle was shot. He was a great guy with a gun, and he was shot and all these other things. Like, yo, man, I've never been one of those people who told you that owning a gun or even having a gun is going to guarantee that you walk out alive. I've never been one of those people either. I just want the fighting chance to be able to walk out alive. And if me having this tool is a way for me to have a fighting chance to walk out alive in a situation, then damn it, I want that. Right? So it's just been weird, man, like listening to both sides of this issue, you know, speak on this thing, and both sides are speaking very passionately. But as someone who's in the middle, who owns guns for home defense and personal protection, and for someone who leans left mostly politically, like, this has been like a really interesting fucking time to like listen to people talk about this issue when both sides of the issue sound crazy as hell to me. Right? And like, we talk about, like, say for instance, like the kids from the Parkland shooting, man, like a lot of them become activated. They're activists, man. They're out here and they're speaking, and you know, they got their voices about them. They're on the news, man. They're like on CNN, they're on MSNBC, man. They're having town halls, you know, down there. And like, you know, there's a groundswell of, yo, we need to do something. And here's another thing too, as a responsible gun owner, I also agree that we need to do something. You know, like, I've talked on the show about how we need background checks. I am not opposed to 3-day gun waiting periods. I've had to wait 3 days in order to receive one of my AR-15s after I paid for it. Like, I'm not opposed to that. We saw you know, stories about you know, we need to have, like, you know, biometric technology and, you know, put on the guns. We need to have insurance, you know, gun owners need to have insurance on their weapons and stuff like that, you know, to like all sorts of things. Like, I'm not opposed to most of the things that they say that they want for gun control. I'm not. But there's this thing where, you know, we're like, well, shit, what do you need with a semi-automatic rifle? Like, and it's funny, like, to listen to people talk about that, because semi-automatic simply means one bullet for one trigger pull. That's all it means. That's all it means. I pulled the trigger one time, one bullet comes out. But it sounds scary. The gun looks scary. Or badass, as a lot of people would like to say. It looks badass. Like, but ultimately, man, I just wish that, like, and I said this on Facebook, and shout out to Cook Simmons, man, like the homie from the Cook and the Gooch podcast, man. Like, I said this on Facebook, and I was like, yo, man, gun control, like, the gun debate is the one debate where people feel like they can determine the needs of others, like, what you need. And like, she kind of put me in my place a little bit. She was like, yo, man, but have you had this, you know, have you ever listened to people talk about the abortion issue, though? And, you know, how people talk about women not being able to get an abortion because they may run into a man who they get married to, or they may marry a man who may want to have children, and now her decision is taken away from her because her husband may want to have kids. Like, that was, you know, I was like, you know what? You're absolutely right. Right? It's not the only issue where people feel like they get to decide the needs of others. It's one of, but it's one, where I get that people feel like, yo, the decision for somebody to own a gun affects the larger population. And it does. It does. And it's why I take my gun ownership so seriously. And it's why I take it so, you know, I look at it as a responsibility more than anything else. But it's just been interesting, man. It's been very interesting to like just kind of listen on both sides of it and watch the NRA go out, you know, go about the business of attacking these kids, the kids which lost friends, lost loved ones, lost teachers. The NRA is actively out here attacking these kids. You got people on the right wing who are calling these kids like fucking crisis actors, and this didn't happen the same way that they did with the Sandy Hook thing. Like, people talking about Sandy Hook didn't happen, it was a hoax, and this is a hoax, and that's bullshit, man. I wish that shit didn't happen. I hate that these things go on. I really fucking do. But the fact that this happened does not mean that I need to get rid of my shit because of what happened to them. I'm sorry for what happened to them. I am. But for me and mine, I want our level of protection. I want some level of protection for me and mine. And that might not necessarily be the level of protection that you feel like is necessary for you and yours. But you don't make those decisions for me. You don't make those decisions for my home. You don't. And that's where, like, I just feel like in the middle of this, because I see it from both sides. As much as like I empathize with what happened, I'm also cognizant of how I feel about my own home and my own protection. And it sounds selfish, but me wanting to walk out of my door every day and come back in the same way I walked out, that's selfish. Me wanting to keep the things that I've been able to obtain in my life and keep them in my home and keep them safe. Yeah, that's selfish too. If you know, you call it selfish. These tools allow for me to be able to do that, even though you may not necessarily agree with my use of said tool or my ownership of said tool. I still look at them as tools. Right? So, yeah, man, like, it was a very unfortunate thing that happened in Parkland, Florida, man. And like I said, I was really not trying to speak on this much at all. But yeah, it was bound to happen, man. I was going to have to say something, especially. Here's the thing. I don't want to say, like, as a gun owner or as a responsible gun owner, I don't speak for these other motherfuckers. I'm speaking for me, you know, like, and I'm speaking for, you know, my home and how I feel about it. And I know some of the people who listen to this show would probably want to hear my perspective on this, despite the fact that I'm getting weary of these conversations. I'm getting weary of this sort of thing happening. I am for most of the gun control measures that a lot of you guys are for also. But I'm also a little dismayed at some of the demonization that happens with the ownership of said rifle, because some asshole decided he was going to take that rifle and do something foolishly devious and foul with it. Right? So yeah, man. That's going on, man. We got some lighter news. Shit. We got some lighter news to kind of get. Well, shit, I don't even know if you can necessarily call this lighter news, man, because this is actually a pretty damn fucked up story. Oh, well, not necessarily fucked up, but it's not exactly a great story either, man. So let me get my music queued up, because we haven't done this in a while. Wait. Damn it. That's not what I wanted to do. Nope. That's not what I wanted to do. But this is what I wanted to do. There we go.
If you're tied up, you better stay tied up, because it's cheaper to keep her. This is from T. It says, it's cheaper to keep her. It's cheaper to keep her. When your little girl make you mad.
All right. So check this out, man. Tisha Campbell Martin and Dwayne Martin are getting divorced. Now, we know Tisha Campbell Martin from, you know, shows like Martin and My Wife and Kids. She's had some other work. Like, she was in the House Party movie and all sorts of stuff. So, right. And Dwayne Martin's an actor, too. Like, he was in the Above the Rim movie. He was in White Man Can't Jump. He's a really, really good basketball player in a lot of those films, right? So they've been married for quite a while. But this story here comes out of TMZ, and it says Martin star Tisha Campbell Martin has filed for divorce from her husband of 22 years. It says Tisha, who played Martin Lawrence's wife in the 90s hit, filed divorce docs in L.A. Wednesday against her husband, Dwayne Martin. The two got hitched in 1996 and have two sons together, Ezekiel and Zen. Tisha tells TMZ that after 27 years of being together and two amazing children, it pains me to announce that I filed for divorce. It's an emotional time, and I graciously ask for privacy for me, our children, and the rest of our family. We recently got Tisha out with fellow Martin stars Martin Lawrence and Tichina Arnold on the heels of rumors that the show was making a comeback. They didn't totally spill the beans, but they came pretty close. Now, I know like a lot of people have been speculating as to whether or not this decision to get divorced has something to do with the fact that she may be getting involved in a Martin reboot. As a lot of people know, like that whole Martin series kind of came towards an end where I believe the last season they couldn't even film at the same time or in the same room together, right? Like they had their scenes separate because of, I believe there were sexual harassment allegations that were made by Tisha Campbell. And some folks are thinking that maybe her husband put her up to making those accusations. And now that she's maybe getting involved in a reboot of the Martin sitcom, that like he's out here, maybe, you know, maybe Dwayne Martin's feel like, yo, you got me out here looking like a fucking fool. Maybe, maybe not. But it's, you know, it's one of those instances, man, where like, yo, it's a marriage that's coming to an end. It was a very long term marriage, man. They were together for 27 years, man. I would hope it wasn't. There had to be something more than that, because I know a lot of people are speculating on whether or not they were divorcing because of this. But who knows, man? Like, maybe this will put them in a better place. Maybe, you know, they would both see some more work, because we haven't really seen a whole lot of Tisha Campbell. We haven't seen a whole hell of a lot of Dwayne Martin over the last few years, man. So hopefully this works out for the best for both of them. But yeah, like Granddaddy said, man, it's cheaper to keep her because we don't know what that divorce settlement is going to look like. Right? So yeah, man. So that was cheaper to keep her, man. Real talk. We are coming up towards the end of the show, but before we go, of course, y'all know we can't get out of here. Y'all know we can't get out of here without honoring our champs.
The champ is here. The champ is here. The champ is here. The champ is here. The champ.
Wait, that's backwards. That's backwards. We do the ass hats first.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
All right, all right. Our first, man, our ass hat of the week, man. Oh, my God. So, Republicans don't necessarily have a monopoly on stupid motherfuckers, right? And this woman may as well have been a Republican, like, congressperson or whatever. Let me see if I can find this story. I thought I had this up here. Where did it go? Where did it go? And I can't find it all of a sudden. Okay, let me see if I can look this up. Nope, that wasn't it either. Jesus Christ, man. Let me see if I can find this. Where did it go? Here we go. Okay, I couldn't find it because they got the wrong damn thumbnail attached to it. Here we go. So, Democratic Florida State Representative Kimberly Daniels, who is pushing a bill that would put the words "In God We Trust" in Florida public schools, has in the past made a series of controversial statements about slavery and Jews, as documented by a video compilation of Daniels' past statements posted by Freedom From Religion Foundation, shows she is not shy about making incendiary comments about racial and religious issues. "I thank God for slavery," she said in one clip. "If it wasn't for slavery, I might be somewhere in Africa worshiping a tree."
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
"You can talk about the Holocaust, but the Jews own everything," she said in another. Last year, Daniels also posted a bizarre video on Facebook Live in which she urged followers to pray for President Donald Trump while ranting about witches and warlocks. Daniels' bill mandating that all schools in Florida display a sign that reads "In God We Trust" sailed through the Florida House late last month, passing by a vote of 97-10. Daniels has said at the time that the purpose of the bill is so simple, just saying put up a poster to remind our children of the foundation of this country. Now, I want people to understand, like, again, they say she's a Democratic state rep. Like, There is a separation of church and state for a reason. The church does not dictate state policy. It shouldn't dictate state policy. Every citizen in America does not believe in God. Every citizen in America does not necessarily believe in your said religion. So to act as if we should all embrace your religion while at the same time denigrating and negating other religions, because we always, everybody looks at Muslims as if they're terrorists. People think Sikhs are Muslim and then assault them because they think that they're Muslim and that therefore Muslim terrorists. Like, the attitudes of a lot of these folks is appalling. Well, it's abhorrent and it's fucking retarded, it's reductive, it's all sorts of, any bad adjective you can find for these stupid motherfuckers, it applies, right? So, wait, they say she's saying some real crazy shit in this video. Let me play this video real quick. Hold up. It's only three minutes and 16 seconds. Let's see what she says.
Florida State Representative Kimberly Daniels is on a mission, a religious mission, to get organized religion back into the public schools.
To adopt rules that require all schools and all buildings used by the school to display in a conspicuous place the state motto, "In God We Trust."
In God she trusts, so she wants every public school to display, "In God We Trust."
The spiritual air force and the demons in the air and on the earth. And
a self-proclaimed preacher and exorcist, she's never been shy about this theocratic goal, openly proclaiming it as she fights demons, battles witches, and breaks curses.
But God had to anoint me to go in the gates of the city, to go in the chambers of the city, to write laws and to be able to debate and write legislation so that his kingdom could come and manifest itself like never before.
Hold on. Hold on. Hold up. Hold up. This is the problem that I've been having with religion for like the last 10 or 15 years, right? Why do these people think that God need their help? Right? God anointed me. Like, you see all these people that are like, they proclaim titles for themselves. I'm an apostle. I am a prophet. Like, people don't, and a lot of these folks don't even like get ordained as these things. Like, they become like, they just kind of anoint themselves and shit. And then they have this idea, like, what did she, if God, if you believe that God is all encompassing, all purposeful, all powerful, omnipresent, why does he need you to write laws and legislation to bring forth his kingdom? Why would he need you? How fucking arrogant is that? How arrogant is that? Right? For you to believe that, like, hey, I had to go to school, right? And I had to learn these civics laws and shit. Like, I had to learn civics and stuff. And I had to go ahead and get elected. I had to get elected, you know, because God made it so that I can get elected. And I had to get elected. And then I had to go and I had to debate with these other people who don't necessarily believe like we believe, right? I had to go in there and I debate them. And then we had to draft laws and stuff. And I had to go in there and I had to draft the laws so that when we could draft the laws, so when God come, everything be ready. Right? Because God need everything to be ready before he can come. That sound like you getting ready for company. Like, yo, I got to clean my crib up real quick, man. Like, you know, my grandma coming over, man. We got to make sure that she got, you know, the nice comforter set in the guest room, man. We got to make sure she got it. You know, we got to make sure we had almond milk because grandma's lactose intolerant, man. She can't do the vitamin D, man. So we got to make sure we had that. We got to make sure we had turkey bacon because grandma done gave up the pork. You know what I'm saying? So we can't have that. We got to be ready. So when grandma come, right? Like, that's how this sound, man. Y'all reducing God to some needy dude that needs you. He doesn't need you. And it's weird, like, listening to them talk like that.
We have to be kingdom-minded no matter what realm we operate in. Even in every position that I hold, where I'm working in the professional arena, whether I'm working in the legislative arena, you have to be kingdom-minded.
Theocracy of God, the kingdom agenda, as opposed to the government agenda.
I'm a commissioner in Jacksonville, Florida, and don't nobody tell me I can't pray nowhere. I can pray anywhere I go.
I mean, it is called freedom of speech. That was like a constitutional right. I'm just saying.
Now you gonna let me swear in on the Bible and tell me I can't preach it? The devil is a liar. Hey!
Come on! Yay! Shaba! Masse! 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 Bashibaya! Yay! Alalamohosha!
That's just the beginning. Daniels has said and done far worse.
And you can talk about the Holocaust, but the Jews own everything. I thank God for slavery. I thank God for the crack house. If it wasn't for the crack house, come on somebody, God wouldn't have never been.
Hold on. Come on somebody, because everybody's sitting there like, hold on, what the fuck she talking about? Right? She talking about, come on somebody. Like, them niggas sitting there like, where the fuck she going with this one? Thank God for the crack house, nigga. You crazy? Well, I did get that VCR for $5, though. Like, okay, sister, I see you. I see you. Come on, bruh.
Able to use me how he can use me now. And if it wasn't for slavery, I might be somewhere in Africa worshiping a tree.
In the United States.
So, there's that anti-blackness shit, too. Like, so, like, I might be in Africa worshiping a tree. Like, ironically enough, like, I know people have this conversation about, you know, Christianity being a white man's religion and stuff like that. And there's some truth to that, especially in how it's manifested itself here in the United States and especially how it was introduced to a lot of black people in the United States. But, like, yo, you look at some of the oldest churches in the world. Some of the oldest Christian churches in the world had nothing to do with Western Africa, had nothing to do with the Europeans. A lot of that was, like, from Eastern Ethiopia. Like, there's some of the oldest churches in the world are right there in Africa, and they were helmed, and they were preached, and they were prophesized, all of that stuff. All that was going on in Africa before white people ever got their hands on it. Now, I know your man Span sounding real Hotepish right now, right? But I'm just saying, like, when she uses that and says that, like, yo, Africa, like, if it wasn't for slavery, then I would probably be in Africa worshiping a tree, like, do you not believe that God is all encompassing and all and omnipresent and in his touch is in everything that is on and in the earth? Like, how deep is your faith? Right? How deep is your faith to where you will mock the admiration of the tree that you say, like, I'm just saying, like, it's things like that made me very cynical about, like, the church, man. And I haven't been to church in years, partly because of messages like that.
Laws are only legitimate, constitutional, if they have a secular purpose.
Okay, but
Daniels' only purpose is to promote her.
Shit. Damn, white man wouldn't shut up. Nah, because I didn't give a damn about what he was talking about. Really, it was about what was going on with this lady in this video. But yeah, man, she is our ass hat of the week, man. Yeah.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
Now, before we get to our champ of the week, man, I did realize, and I wanted to get to this before I got out of here, I did realize that we do have quite a few emails that we need to get into, and I want to read these before we get up out of here tonight, man, so we can get everybody their shine and their feedback and their responses. So let me pull up, let's see. Okay, this first email here, this comes from Miss Smart from the Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine podcast, man. Shout out to Miss Smart. And we definitely got to have her on the show, man. Real, really great podcaster, man. I met her at NegroCon, man. We definitely need to set that up. But Miss Smart writes in to say, hi, Span, Rashani, and Deidre. With regard to Disneyland, as of February 27, 2018, only one store in the park had Black Panther merchandise. I know this because my girl is there right now with her kids. The specific location is Adventureland. They better get their shit together because my girl is hella litigious. I know that's right, man. They damn sure better start getting a lot of that Black Panther shit out there. If for only they wanted to get the money. But, like, yo, man, like, Black Panther is a Disney property. Black Panther has a badass Disney princess, a badass Disney king, a badass would-be Disney queen Nakia. So, like, yeah, man, like, yo, Disney needs to get on that shit. Like, real talk, they need to get on that shit. The Black Panther universe, man, like, the Black Panther kingdom is for damn sure one that needs to be uplifted and merchandised to the hilt, you know what I mean? So, yeah, man, thanks for that email, Miss Smart. I think she sent more than one, though. I know she sent more than one. Let me see if I can update this. Hold on. Let me see if we can. Oh, Well, I'll be damned. Let's see if we do it like that. Refresh it for 3 months. How about that? Okay. Nope. That was it. Yeah, that was it. So thank you again, Ms. Smart, for your email, man. I really do appreciate that. And like I said, we definitely got to get Ms. Smart here on the Span Report podcast, man. Real talk. Our second email comes from Christina. I'm not going to read your last name, but, Christina writes in. This is actually, it's kind of long, fam. It's kind of long. So let's see if I can kind of, let's get this together, fam. Let's see what we got. So Christina writes in to say, hey, Mr. Span, I just caught the recent episode and talk about a treat. I haven't had the opportunity to get a review from black viewers on Black Panther because most of the reviews I managed to catch are on YouTube and mainly white, save for one black dude on IGN. So needless to say, I was happy to hear the show. Every single point mentioned was food for thought, as I haven't been fortunate to see the movie more than once. A little Cliff Notes version of my situation. I currently live overseas, Japan. Okay, shout out to you over in Japan. That probably accounts for some of the numbers we getting over there. Shout out. Thank you, fam. Real talk. Thank you. But was fortunate enough to see the movie essentially the night it opened because of the time difference. If I hadn't had that opportunity, I would have considered flying back to Detroit. But then I remembered that's a $2,000 ticket and a 15-hour flight minus any overlay. So, yeah. Yeah, it was probably more economical for you to just go ahead and stay there in Japan. Didn't know you was from Detroit, but shout out, sister. D-Town, stand up. It says, anyway, I live in a predominantly white area, though. Fortunately, there were some black and brown people here, so it wasn't a surprise that the majority of the theater didn't look like me. Like your guests, I had similar experience where the theater was quiet for the most part. Of course, those of us with melanin clapped, laughed, and cheered, but it was so scattered that it would have paled in comparison to the Star Southfield or the Star Fairlane. I'm almost certain that there are those are still a thing. Well, Star Southfield, I don't know if it's still a thing. Star Fairlane is where I took my daughter to go see the movie, so yeah, it's still a thing. Let's see, where else? It said, I'm almost certain those are still a thing. When Claw goes, I made it rain, I died, with the loudest person in the whole theater laughing like, really? It says, the audience was dry as fuck, which made me suddenly miss home and remember how lively it was in the audience when I saw Halloween H2O at this old movie theater on Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. I'm only dropping these references because I know you or someone in the audience will know. Oh, yeah, I definitely know what you're talking about. It says, people were screaming and clapping, and it suddenly hit me of where I was and as well as those I was surrounded by. I could only imagine doing the scenes that they thought about being called colonizers, and eternally it made me cackle. At the end of the movie, the masses left. Barely 20 of us stuck around for the end credits. Like, where the fuck are these people going? They should have known how MCU movie works by now. Right? You know what? The first time we saw it, me and my wife, we saw it. And like it was a bunch of people that got up and left, but it was quite a few people that stayed. And like, ironically enough, it was, you know, some of the colonizers, they stayed because they also knew how the Marvel Cinematic Universe worked. So they got that goodie. They got those goodies when they decided to stay as well. It says, anyway, like the guest said, I am so sorry I forgot her name. That was Deidre James from the Details podcast. I'm not letting that steal my joy whatsoever, not one iota. My nieces finally have these beautiful, strong, empowered black women that they can see in themselves, and we now have a movie that doesn't depict Africa as some desolate, Ebola-ridden shithole, as they like us to believe, but rather this place filled with beautiful people, a beautiful landscape, and a beautiful culture. I cried in the movie because for once it's the Africa I've always known existed right there for the colonizers to choke on. Sorry this email is long. Just wanted to mention how much I love the episode as well as the show in general, and look forward to seeing it updated on my podcast feed. Keep up the great work. Now, you know what, Christina? Thank you so much for this email, man. Because like I was kind of self-conscious about like the sound quality on that particular episode. Like, it wasn't the greatest, but for you to be able to listen through that and to get everything that you got from that and to enjoy that, it means the world to me. And I really do appreciate your continued listenership all the way over in Japan. Real talk, I really do appreciate that. And your D-Town hometown, like, yo, thank you so much. Thank you for the references too, because like I got that, and I'm pretty sure some of the people from Detroit who gonna listen to this later, they're like, okay, Christina from the crib, all right. So thank you so much, Christina, for your email, and I look forward to hearing from you again, sister. Real talk. Go ahead and write us again. I really do appreciate the email. Another email that I got. Wait a second. Let me, because this is a combined, that's why I can't find the shit. It's combining my stuff with the beer and chicken stuff. Okay. Jesus, man. All right. This email here comes from Leslie. And Leslie writes in and say, hi, Span. I know you're busy with work and the new show, but I missed the Span report. I don't listen to the BNC podcast for the sports stuff. When you have time, please put out the report. While I appreciate the expansion, I was hoping this won't cancel the old show. I miss hearing from you and your take on what's going on. Take care, from Leslie from Barrington, Florida. Well, okay, Leslie. Yeah, you know what? You're right. There was a little bit of a lull when it came to the Span Report show. I know last week we did the Black Panther special episode, and I hadn't really talked, especially for February. Like, I think I may have put on like maybe two regular episodes of the Span Report for February, and it was a lot of stuff going on with like me being on vacation, and like even some of the guys for like the Beer and Chicken podcast, which you don't listen to, but the Beer and Chicken podcast with Black Panther coming out, like it was a lot of stuff going on in February. It really kind of hindered some of my recording schedule, and it's part of the reason why I'm doing the shows on Saturday. I'm trying to do these early Saturday like mornings. Like, I don't want to do the shows this late on a Saturday, because you know I got family obligations too. So you know, yeah, here's your show. The shows will be regularly done on Saturday afternoons, better yet, Saturday mornings. Late Saturday mornings is where we're really trying to get the show to be done, on late Saturday mornings every week. That's what we're aiming for, right? Every late Saturday morning. And I plan to bring you these shows every week. I have some guests lined up for next week. So hopefully this will work for you, and we can get more shows out to you. And yes, like, we are expanding the Span Report. Like, I'm actively searching out more voices, because although I appreciate you wanting to hear my voice and my take on things, I also think that there's some other voices that need to be elevated and could stand to be heard. Like, it's part of the reason why I got the Beer and Chicken podcast, because it's another opportunity for me to talk about something other than, you know, some of the common, like some of the deep shit that we talk about here and some of the newsy stuff that we talk about here. It's a way for me to kind of unwind and kind of talk with my fellas about some of the things that we talk about, sports, like I would be at the barbershop or something. I'm looking for other voices to be a part of this network. I'm looking for other people who want to get their voices heard. It's part of the reason why I tell you guys to like send in the emails and use the voicemails and stuff like that. There are people who I think definitely need to be heard, and they're not being heard because they don't have the platform. And because I've been able to do this platform, and I've been able to do this podcast for as long as I've been able to, I want to extend that to other people. And so, yeah, although I get that you know, the Beer and Chicken podcast might not necessarily be your thing, the Span Report ain't going nowhere. This is going to be, I mean, this is still the flagship of the new Span Report podcast network, but there are other things coming down the pike. And I had to kind of tend to those a little bit to like kind of get these things off the ground, but yo, I'm not going anywhere. And I appreciate you looking out and wanting this, right? Like, you like, yo, where you at, nigga? Like, come on, nigga. I need some shows. Shit. I need this. What you doing? Right. I appreciate that. So thank you again for that email. I can't thank you enough, man. Real talk. It's wonderful for you guys to like kind of like let your voices be heard. And it's one of the things that I called for back in episode 190. So I really do appreciate everybody who's going about the business of doing that, man, making their voices heard here at this Span Report. And I think I had one more. And I don't. So that is everything. So those are all the emails for the Span Report this week. And now we go to our champ of the week.
The champ is here. 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 The champ is here.
right, our champ of the week this week here at the Spin Report Podcast is the Philando Castile Charity, man. And the reason that the Philando Castile Charity is the champ of the week this week is because they wiped out the debts, the lunch debts of the district where he worked, right? So, you know, we brought up Philando Castile as we were talking about the NRA and gun rights and stuff like that, and how the NRA did not stand for the gun rights of Philando Castile, and he was killed by police in the Minneapolis area. But this story here is, this actually comes out of CNN. It says that that's how Philando Castile, who was killed by a police officer during a 2016 traffic stop, used to help kids who couldn't afford lunch. The school nutrition supervisor would dip into his pocket and pay the bill. Now a charity running his name has multiplied his mission by thousands, wiping out the lunch debt of every student in all 56 schools in the Minnesota St. Paul Public Schools where Castile worked. That means that no parent of the 37,000 kids who eat meals at school need to worry about how to pay that overdue debt. According to a post on the YouCaring fundraising page, Philando feeds the children. Philando is still reaching into his pocket and helping the kid out one by one. Pam Fergus, the Metro State University educator who runs the fund with her students, dropped off a check for about $35,000 this week at the school district's office, she told CNN. The money will clear every cent families owe for school lunches. That's important because until the debt is paid, students' caregivers cannot submit paperwork to request free or reduced price lunches based on need, Fergus said. They just kept accruing the debt every day, getting further and further into debt, she said, adding that some families owed as much as $1,000. Even after the dramatic expansion of lunch subsidy programs, many students cannot afford or don't know about reduced price lunches. And when students can't pay, many districts often give them cold sandwiches in lieu of their peers' hot meals. Some schools deny them any lunch at all. The Philando Fund has surpassed its $5,000 goal. It stood at $107,000 before this week's check cleared, with about 3,000 donations ranging from $1.50 to $1,000 each. The pocket's gotten pretty deep, Fergus said. In an open letter to Castile in December when the kitty hit six figures, just 124 days after it launched, Fergus vowed to continue to honor your integrity and spirit. Across the country, people are discussing lunch shaming, she wrote. We're discussing the embarrassment a child suffers when parents cannot afford lunch. Your spirit is moving to change that issue. And kudos to that charity. Kudos to the work that they're doing, feeding those kids in the spirit of Philando Castile. That's amazing, man. That's amazing. Like, it brings, like, you know, it's one of those things where people talk about it restores my faith in humanity sometimes. Like, that's one of those stories where it does kind of, like, restore my faith in humanity. There's a lot of great people out here doing a lot of great things on behalf of others that they don't really have to do. And they're going about the business of making other people's comfort their business. So the Philando Feed the Children are the champs of the week this week here at the Span Report Podcast, man. Real talk. But I got to get out of here, y'all. It's getting a little bit late. I've been running my mouth for quite some time. But before I go, of course, I got to remind you guys how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report Podcast. Let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit that hotline up at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those messages, man. Those voicemail messages, I'll play them and I'll respond to them right here on the show. Email me at feedback@thespanreport.com. feedback@thespanreport.com. Go ahead, leave those emails. I'll read those emails like I did tonight and respond to you right here live on the show. Also, hit me up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. Go ahead and follow the man's there. 5-star reviews on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio, man. Those 5-star reviews help immensely, man. If you can't pay any money to buy a shirt or a mug or anything, it costs you nothing to go ahead and leave those 5-star reviews, man. And it helps spread the word about the show and let other people know that you're messing with us and that you really like what's going on over here at the Span Report Podcast Network. And also, for all of your Span Report needs, go to www.thespanreport.com. Everything's available there. All of the podcasts, all of the replays of the podcast, the polls are there. You can vote in the polls. You can leave your comments there. You can buy a shirt. You can buy a mug. You can buy a hoodie. You can donate to the show. You can do whatever, pretty much whatever it is you like over at thespanreport.com. And so go to www.thespanreport.com for all of your Span Report needs, man. But I got to get out of here, man. I gotta go. But it was great talking to you guys again. And I will talk to you guys again soon. So until next time, fam. Peace.